again, and he's got it!
Gavin was closing in. Oh, Gavin has scored!
Abdul Osman against Brad Jones to put Liverpool out of the cup, and Northampton 3!
Yeah!
Goal! And
get
it! Hello, we're back with It's All Cobblers to Me, the weekly podcast all about Northampton Town Football Club. I'm Charles Commons, and think of this as that bunch of flowers you picked up at the petrol station at the last minute, so you don't get in trouble. For the next hour, myself and Danny will be discussing all the latest Cobblers news and trying to think of enough to say about the 0-0 draw at Port Vale to make this episode last longer than 5 minutes. If you enjoy what we do and would like to help us to keep bringing you weekly Cobblers content, then you can join the fan club on Patreon, where you'll get access to our community forums, bonus episodes, and you'll help us to continue to sponsor NTFC women's player Abby Bruin too. You can help us to do that by signing up for just £2 a month at patreon.com/cobblers2me. And it's a huge thank you. I just want to start the pod off this week with a huge thank you. We've had a few new people to the fan club in recent weeks, and I just want to acknowledge those people. So first of all, we've got the head groundsman himself, Paul Knowles. Thank you, Paul. Then James Boddington, Chris Freeman, Ryan Eldred and Edward Smith. Thank you very much, guys, for your support. It really is appreciated. Now, Danny, last week...
Hello.
Jeffy, hello, by the way. Yes, hello. Last week, Jeffy had found herself a friend of the pod at Walsall, but yes, we didn't know who it was. Well, I'm pleased to say I have the answer.
Oh, brilliant. Who was it?
Well, hi, guys. It was me who said hello to Jeffy. I said I listened to the pod and love it. And then I said, pass the pod. It was outside the away end. I'm a huge Cobblers fan from Bletchley. Keep up the good work. From Lee Gray.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lee.
Do we believe him? Or is this going to be like one of them I am Spartacus moments? Well, we get a new email every week saying it was me. I said hello to Jeffy. I said I listened to the pod and love it. And I said pass the pod.
Wouldn't it be great if that was the case? I think that would be absolutely superb. But no, Lee also messaged us on Twitter as well, sent us a DM pretty quickly after the pod had come out on Tuesday to tell us. So I think it definitely, well, unless it's two different Lee Grays, both claiming to be the one. Lee Gray, which obviously sounds a bit silly, doesn't it? But there you go. How are you, mate? Are you well?
I'm all right. I'm good. I want to take it back to the start of the pod for a minute, actually, Charles. You compared us to that bunch of flowers that you get. At this, are you saying that everybody should hand their partners this podcast as their last-minute present?
I think that would be a brilliant gift for any partner.
Here you go. Two blokes talking about Northampton Town. What more could you want? Talk about a 0-0 draw from Northampton Town as well.
I mean, think about it this way, right? If you were a mad keen cobbler, then what better present than an hour of audio content all about your favourite football team? I mean, obviously, it should probably be Mark Webber and Jake Sharp that you're listening to, and that would be much better. But
should we just do the entire pod in the style of Graham Torrington and his late night love? Maybe that would just entice people. You know, it might make something a little bit special about if Lee Gray wants to go and give his partner this episode of the pod. It should just be, Sam Hoskins delicately pushes his ball down the wing.
Hang on a minute. I just need to get a fan. Oh, there we are. Oh, I was flushing hot and cold then.
Valentine's Day will be gone by the time this pod is out. So
it will only by a day, Danny.
Yeah, that, well, not only if you got me.
That's why we're the bunch of flowers that you pick up at the last minute.
With a reduced bunch of flowers that have been chucked out.
They're not even roses, mate. They're not even roses. They're all gone. We're like some daffodils because that's all that was left.
So Weber and Sharp are the roses, the pristine roses at 20 quid a head.
I'd say so, yes.
With a shriveled, almost dead equivalent. Is that what you're saying? So people are like, not only have you given me a late present, but it's also...
it's also not worth it. Also,
Neil's not even there. Come on. Because it's the big bowl tonight, Charles, isn't it?
It is, it's as the, we're
it's
recording.
The big bowl.
The big bowl.
What's your prediction on the big bowl?
My prediction for the big bowl. I don't even know who's playing. Is it the Bengals? Are they playing?
Yes, it's...
good. Can I guess who they're playing against?
Yeah, go on.
Is it the Biscuits?
It's not the Biscuits.
Right, okay. I'm all out of ideas, and I'm afraid.
It's the Los Angeles Rams, which I think, I assume, are the favourites, because it says, I'm looking on the BBC, the underdogs for the All-Stars. So I've not really heard of the Cincinnati Bengals before. I might be completely wrong, but...
I've heard of the Bengals, definitely.
I've heard of the Bengals, yeah.
No,
Eternal Flame.
I knew you were going to go into that.
I was trying to think of a song. I just
knew. I was like, I know where this is going. Back to the 80s. Now it really is Graham Torrington's Late Night Love. right, come on then. Let's get it out of the way, shall we? Port Vale 0, the Cobblers 0. I have literally written here on the running order, fairly dull.
Yeah, the fact that you've written the crossing accuracy stats concerns me about how much we're going to actually delve into this game. But you were grabbing for something.
I was clutching at proverbial scores. Yes, I was indeed.
Did you go to France for this one?
Well, Germany? I actually went to Germany, but then I was told to leave.
Merkel.
I was kicked out. I don't know what it was. I think they just didn't like the look of me. So instead, I got up and I hopped, skipped and jumped over the border. And Neil and I had a very romantic afternoon in Gay Paddy.
Oh, nice.
It was lovely. Nice. Neil sat there eating a baguette. Yeah. And I had the frog's legs.
Couldn't be any more stereotypical if you threw Eric Sabin in with.
Well, he was serving us. It was Eric Sabin was serving it to us. It was amazing. It was a magical afternoon of romance.
Excellent. I didn't watch it live. I've watched it this morning back. Nope.
Me and Neil at the restaurant?
Yeah.
Oh, it was more entertaining. Let me tell you that.
At El Sabin's. So my early grasp of what had gone on is basically following what you two had wrote on WhatsApp while I was out at a birthday party. And it made
Hang on. Can we just... The birthday party, Danny. Who was it for?
It was for a friend's three-year-old.
Oh.
So there's a lot of pin the tail on the donkeys and all that kind of stuff, which, ironically, we tried to pin a few tails and a few donkeys on the pitch. And
did you play Pass the Parcel?
Yes.
Did you win Pass the Parcel?
No, because my child wasn't the birthday child, and that's the rules.
Yeah, well, I thought the rules were that everybody has to win. Was there not a bag in every wrap?
There was a little bit of a treat with everyone, but then you had to do something like stand on your head I've not seen that before, but you unwrap a layer, you get a little sweet from a bag,
right?
And then you've got a little action to do. That's where I was, following your texts whenever I went to the toilet. Your WhatsApp. Popping into it every now and then. So it made
I don't
it
know
sound
to just let you carry on with this. I don't know what's going to happen next.
It was your usual mix of your meltdowns, basically. You and
I thought I was quite. I thought I was quite relaxed and calm. I mean, the one thing that I'd said before this match was that I was going to really try my best not to let it get me wound up. If it was still sort of 0-0 at 75 minutes, then not, because that's what had happened the last two games. It had been 0-0 for ages. We hadn't looked like we were going to score. And I was getting more and more wound up by the fact that we just didn't look like we were able to, you know, magic up any kind of effort on target. And I just thought, no, I'm getting on a bit. You know, I'm 37, I think. Yeah, I'm 37. And I should be able to just, you know, watch a game of football for what it is. So I tried.
Mm. Yeah. I don't think it was that bad. My expectations weren't high, basically, when I watched it back. So yeah, watching it back this morning, I thought it was more of the same in terms of really decent, I thought, up until the last third again. The last little bit, we just couldn't get right. Just couldn't get the last ball right. We couldn't get the finishing quality right.
Yeah.
But overall, I thought it was a pretty good performance up until that bit. Like defensively, solid. Yeah. Liking the back three, to be fair. Like, they seem to have got an understanding already. McLaws fitted in really well. We've reduced Port Vale to pretty much nothing. Roberts didn't even have as much to do this week as he did last week, mm-hmm. Against supposedly a much better team this week. And I thought we just bossed the game in completely and just didn't make it count at the right end of the pitch. Like when we had that final ball to play in, it was never right. And that's something we've really got to get right, because if we do, then we're flying. Because we just sat here every week saying it, and it's been 30 games now. We're just not seeming to get there no matter what we do. And I think we're doing everything right in terms of the numbers of the players we're getting forward. I paused it a couple of times thinking, right, I'm just going to have a look at this, where our players are. So when we got the ball in sort of the halfway line, just inside their half and stuff, we did have four or five players just bombing on. And to the intents there, we're not a defensive team, I don't think. It's not like Heath Cole land where midfielders didn't exist. It's not just a hoof and hope type situation. There is proper intent about what we're doing, and there's players who are bursting lung to get forward and to show that desire to get forward. It's just that last little bit is not there.
So what is it then? Because this is the thing that I struggle with. I'm exactly the same as you. I think we look solid at the back. Against Port Vale, you're right. I never felt like the way that I felt overall was that I never felt worried about Port Vale scoring against us. But similarly, I never really got excited about the chance that we would score ourselves. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for me, 0-0 was exactly the right result for the game. I don't think either team was ever really going to score. So what is it then that we're missing up front? Because it's not the striker's fault solely. It's the whole team has got to, you know, defend as a team, attack as a team, blah, blah, blah. So what is it? Are we trying too hard maybe? Is there that thing of that? And we've talked about the lack of, feels like the lack of goals from open play. I think the stats are that actually we've only scored two goals less from open play than we have set pieces. I think that's around about the right number. But do you think that's maybe playing on the minds of the players a little bit? Do you think there's maybe a case of they're just trying a bit too hard and they need to relax a little bit more and then it'll come?
Yeah, possibly. I think there's possibly that desperation to go and do something yourself. But I think a lot of it's to do with our attacking patterns. Like there doesn't seem to be any kind of drills, if that makes sense, in terms of it doesn't look like anything's been worked on in terms of when it goes into the striker, who runs off, this player's running off, and there's little patterns going on, which you usually see in good attacking teams where they've got ideas and they've got a clear, like if this guy gets the ball, we run on, one person comes short, that kind of thing. It seems more like we're putting the ball up there and we're hoping that someone's going to make something happen, which sometimes it does. Mitch Pinnacle sometimes come out with something. Sometimes they'll put a cross in and someone will get on the end of it. But it feels more like hopefulness rather than trained kind of moves off the ball, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
And I think I don't know if it's just they're getting desperate, but I just think we just need a little bit more understanding between the front players, maybe, that we just don't have at the minute. You know, when you've got a front two of that have just been working together the entire time. Mm-hmm. They know how each other work. They've got Stevens and Jamil Matt at Forest Green who'll just work off each other. There's probably other examples we've had in the past where you just know how each other are going to work. Like your Foresters and Gale will just work off each other, for example.
Yeah. Or,
you know, you can name a couple of combinations like that. At the moment, it's just a lot of lone players and a lot of injuries that's just making that front two more you go and try to do something by yourself rather than we're going to work out a couple of moves to try and get behind them kind of thing.
And it's not like either we've had necessarily a front two partnership at all this season, is it? Because, I mean, essentially, Etete was a lone target man, essentially, wasn't he? He was like the spearhead of the attack. And then you would have him being backed up by Pinnock and Hoskins on the wings coming in with Lewis behind him. It's only really been, well, this game where it was Danny Rose and Louis Apare that were put together as a front two that you kind of went, oh, okay. There. So it probably is expecting maybe a little bit too much that they would just click straight away in this game and go on and have a partnership for the 90 minutes. It was always going to take time for players to get used to playing with each other in a match situation, I suppose. For me, I mean, it's interesting that you said that you, it's like they don't necessarily work on patterns or... because I do feel a little bit like our game plan is essentially get the ball out wide to Pinnock and cross it in, or get the ball out wide to Hoskins and cross it in. And that is it. There isn't really anything else. There's no going through the middle. There isn't any. Yeah, there just isn't anything essentially other than that. And when you're not playing Pinnock on the wing, because he was going through the middle a lot, wasn't he? Behind the two strikers. And for me, and I think for a lot of other Cobblers fans as well, he's wasted there. That's not the position that he works best in. And yet, it's almost like, well, you can't leave him out of the team because he's so good. And of course, you can't leave him out. I'd agree with that. But I don't think shoehorning him into a position that isn't his, you know, where he isn't able to actually do anything and create anything is the answer either. I appreciate the fact that obviously Colin Calderwood is renowned for his defensive mindset, isn't he? And the way he can set teams up to keep clean sheets. I mean, go back to when he was the actual Cobblers manager, you know, our clean sheet record was, you know, achieved back then with Lee Harper in goal and that team. And now we're not that far off that record now, are we, with Liam Roberts and the current back four, or, you know, back five, however you want to look at it. So there's obviously a massive thing there for us in terms of, right, we're creating that base of it's really tough to score against us. But there doesn't seem to be enough of a balance with the other end of the, you know, the other end of the pitch. We're incredibly difficult to score against now. We're back to pre-COVID break form, but we're not really creating enough outside of set pieces. I mean, broken record time, isn't it? That is essentially the way it feels. And I think that the opposition know that. And that's what the struggle is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but again, I don't think we're necessarily even as defensive as we were under Calderwood. We're not set up to go and shut up shop and go and own a point. I think we're set up to have that as our base, but also we're actually trying to get forward. We are attempting to make things happen. It's just not happening. I almost think the Swindon game, the 5-2, spooked us a little bit back into... oh, pants, we've got to get back and defend ourselves again. because since then it's been like 1-0, 1-1, 0-0, 1-0s all the time. And it's been a lot tighter and the three have come in. Whether that's coincidence or not, I'm not sure. But it's just trying to find what works for us up front. And I think we've kind of started again in January to do that. We had a clear plan of attack with Etete there. We had a clear get it up to him. He's going to either hold it up or he's going to get hold of it and do something and bring other players into play. Whereas it's just felt so bitty since January because people are coming in and out. The loanees aren't completely fit. So it's hard to get that rhythm of what's actually going to happen up there because it's different every week. And it's Danny Rose one week, it's Epio another week, it's Kanu, it's Apare, who seems to be the main man now.
Which I'm happy with because I mean, he wasn't really in the game, I didn't feel that much.
No, but he still makes it stick, doesn't he?
And and there was I think, a chance in the first half, I think, where he just, in fact, this could have been a different game altogether now that I'm thinking about it, you know. But there was a moment in one of the games recently, it might have been last Tuesday, it might have been on the Saturday, where he got the ball and he had no right, really, to take the defender on. He was quite wide of the goal on the right-hand side. And he still took it on and still went for, you know, a shot. And, I mean, okay, it was saved or whatever, but to get past the player in the first place, I've not seen a Cobblers striker do that for ages. Even a Tete, really. You mentioned at the start how you were quite worried about how I'd put some stats in the running order. Within reason. I mean, I think it's fair to say because, you know, the game is that dull. But essentially, this is why I'm worried and this is why I get frustrated with our attacking. And I know you're saying it's not the intent and that the intent is there. And that I do agree with. It's not a lack of trying. But the thing that worries me, we had one shot on target in the whole game and only seven shots over the whole game in total.
Yeah, it's the seven that's worrying as well, isn't it?
Yes, because that to me just isn't that great. Yeah. And the crossing accuracy percentage that you read, well, that brings me on to our lovely friend, Mr. Samuel Tobias Hoskins. So our crossing accuracy, and according to, this is according to the stats that are on the NTFC website for the match report, the crossing accuracy was just 6%. Vale, who weren't much better in watching the game, I didn't think, but their crossing accuracy was 35%. Now, I mean, you could argue that both of those aren't very good, but 6% of our crosses were actually accurate. I can guarantee you that the vast majority of those crosses are being counted, the vast majority of those that are being counted as crosses to bring that percentage right down, as Sam Hoskins trying to cross it in and failing to beat the first man at every opportunity.
Does that include corners as well, though?
No. Well, the crossing accuracy might. What I'm talking about is when he gets the ball on the right-hand side, he goes to cross it in and it literally just bounces straight off of the... And I get it. Sometimes that is going to happen, but it seems to happen far too often. The people, and there are Cobblers fans out there who have been against Sam Hoskins for a very long time. You know, things have been said like, we'll never win promotion with him in the team. And I know that little stat has been, you know, rubbished twice. But at the same time, we've been relegated twice with him in the team as well. And I'm just starting to see now that, is it 7 years now he's had? And I just...
Pushing it.
I'm sorry. And I'm sorry, Sam. I really like you and I really want you to be good.
It's starting to
really annoy me. Just learn to cross the ball in.
Yeah. It's frustrating because he'll then go and have a blinder once in a couple of games, wouldn't he? And I don't know what the answer is because I think at the moment it's playing wing back where McGowan would usually be playing and putting in fantastic balls every game, which makes it even more frustrating that he's in your... Because you think Magaza's going to actually thrive in that wing-back position. I don't know what the answer is with Hoskins because he seems to be having to be slotted in and played. Like, there's hardly ever... it must be the way he trains. We've talked about this before. It must be the way he trains, the way he puts himself about professionally.
I think he's a proper team player.
He is. And I think that makes him hard to drop. And I think that's what essentially you have to do in training is make yourself difficult to
and
drop.
He's a yes man as well. He's a yes man. You know, John Brady turns around to him and says, Sam, I need somebody to fill in at right wing back. Will you do it? Yes. Sam, well, I need you to fill in. But I mean, I'm pretty certain that if you went and asked him to play in goal, he would do it. He wouldn't say no. He would still go and do it. He'd say, yeah, of course I will. You know, that's the, and I'm not saying that that is a bad thing, by the way, at all. I think that's a credit to him. But you're right. It makes him incredibly difficult to therefore drop. And I just, we're seeing, aren't we? He came off, didn't he? Was that the midweek game against Newport?
I think Newport came off, yeah.
And he was subbed off, and it was a bit like, and whenever Sam Hoskins gets subbed off, you think, oh, is that the end of Hoskins? It's a bit of a Gary Lineker moment. Graham Taylor pulls Lineker and the career over. Done, finished. You don't come back from that, Lineker. I worry a little bit, but also at the same time, I think, oh, does that mean finally we've got somebody to challenge him in his position? And I thought, and I really hoped it was going to be Dylan Connolly. Mm-hmm. And that hasn't happened. And I don't know. Maybe I'm going a bit OTT on it all. But there is a part of me that thinks that we won't really be able to move on until Sam does.
He's not going to move on, Charles. He's going to get that testimonial.
You want his testimonial.
You want that 10-year testimonial.
His testimonial.
But we'll talk about Hoskins for the rest of the time while he's here. It'll be the same conversation we're having all the time, won't it? I don't know what the answer is.
The answer is that he learns to cross the ball.
Yeah.
The
crossing is the thing, isn't it? He can do something on the spur of a moment. I think sometimes as a confidence player, in terms of if he's got the beating of his man within the first few minutes, he could have a good game. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes if he beats his man quickly and doesn't have time to think about it, he puts in a good ball. But when he beats his man and he takes it on and he's got a bit more time to think, sometimes he gets it all wrong. And I think maybe that was a problem on Saturday, because they were giving us quite a bit of the ball in the wing back positions. When I thought Koike on the other side actually is suiting this 3-5-2 a lot more.
Oh,
I know Neil is not a fan, but not having him to rely on as a left back, like an out and out left back, I think he's thriving there now.
Speaking of crosses, was it this game where the cross came in from the right for Koike and he put it over the bar, or was that?
I know that was Newport. That was Newport.
I mean, but that sort of thing shows you, doesn't it, that
that's where we need him.
He is a threat, and that is exactly, and he will score goals, I think, in this formation and in that wing back role. He just needs to work on his finishing, but you know. That's it, isn't it?
That's so what everyone does, doesn't they?
Well, yeah, exactly, right now. Just a quick word. Mukwasa got his 10th booking of the season, so he misses the next two games.
They thought it was descent, but it wasn't, was it? It was John Brady said afterwards it was the tackle, and he was always going to be booked for the challenge,
handball,
I think.
Handball.
Which is odd, because I don't think it was like a blatant handball.
It was a dreadful decision to handball. Yeah. The referee has even said, so the Chronicle Echo ran a story that was basically said that the referee had even said that it was a harsh decision.
Yeah, which is ridiculous. You can't take a booking back, can you?
No, and this is the thing that's frustrating John Brady, isn't it? Is these ridiculous decisions that are being made by the referees. And, you know, I know there's lots of Cobblers fans that have been sort of saying, well, Sean McWilliams made sure of the booking by running over at the referee the way he did. I mean, I get it, but according to John Brady, the yellow card was already out. So he was already going to get booked for handball. Mm-hmm. And that's Sean McWilliams turning around and going, well, what do you want me to do? You know, do you want me to basically not press him, not close down? Because the ball has literally hit him on the hand. His hand hasn't been up. It isn't a deliberate handball. So why is it a yellow card? And I get the frustration from John Brady, from Sean McWilliams, from, you know, anybody else. I mean, John Brady, we didn't realise this, did we? Even when we recorded the preview show, that John Brady would be in the stands
serving a one-match touchline ban for four yellow cards over the course of the season so far. I can't personally blame him for the passion that he shows, because all he's doing is exactly what I do, which is getting wound up at terrible referees. And the problem is that, especially in our sport, the referees are untouchable. You say that a referee was poor and you get a fine. It shouldn't be that way. I understand the respect campaign, and there is, you know, there is no excuse for, you know, being horrible to anybody. However, you should be able to turn around and say that the referees had a stinker. That should be allowed. And the referee should be made to be held accountable for their poor displays and for their decision making. They shouldn't be just, you know, not allowed to be spoken to. And I'm not suggesting that the referees should be put in front of the press. I don't think that's what needs to happen. I think what needs to happen is that they should be, you know, having to actually speak to, I don't know, maybe maybe the managers afterwards get to actually, you know, there's almost like a press conference style thing where the referee just takes questions from the coaches and he explains the decision. Now, the one thing that I put this both on Twitter and in the Patreon Slack channel on Sunday. So I was watching Italy versus England in the Six Nations. And the one thing, the one big noticeable difference was how the referee in that game, every single decision that he made, he explained. Sometimes he actually would call over the captains and say, this is what's happened, and this is the decision that I have made based on that, and this is therefore how I've reached that decision. Or he would just, you know, depending on what it was, you know, if it was a small infringement that only needed, you know, I don't know, let's say it was a knock-on or something, that's fairly obvious, he just says knock-on. But he explains the decision. He's not just saying, that's a free kick, or that's a penalty. He's actually saying, that's a knock-on, and therefore it's a free kick or a penalty or whatever it is to the opposition. They don't do that in football. Referees just say, free kick, foul, that's it. They don't explain. They don't do anything, you know, more. If a player goes over to question the referee as to what it is and what he's done, the player just gets told to go away. In my opinion, there's no respect going from the referee to the player. It's just a thing of, I'm in charge and you'll do what I say, without any repercussion for that person. And there was somebody on Twitter did come back to me and say, well, the other thing that you need to compare is that how often do you see players surrounding the referee in rugby? And I agree, you don't see that happen. But is that because of the fact that the referees are more open to actually explaining their decisions to the players, who then accept those decisions based on the explanation given? Regardless of whether the decision's right or not, at least they've had an explanation there to say, well, this is what happened and this is what the law says, and therefore that's the decision I've made.
Yeah, I think it's just an ongoing problem. It's not going to change anytime soon. It's not changed for years. It's been like this since we started watching football, and this, the standard of refereeing in our leagues is
I think it's appalling. Got worse, it's, though, Danny.
I don't know. It's something to do with the training. It's got to change. Like, it wasn't just us for on Saturday or on Tuesday or last Saturday. I think it's been three in a row, which has been awful referees. It's both teams, both making ridiculous decisions, and it's not something that we're getting on a high horse about because we've had some any bad decisions go against us, but it's that constant, isn't it? It's frustrating.
It is, and it is that. And I mean, I think I pointed out on Saturday that there was a terrible decision that Sam Hoskins had clearly fouled one of the Port Vale players. He'd pulled him back or something like that, and the referee doesn't give a free kick. He let play go on. And we had the ball, not Port Vale. And it was like, well, he's just as bad for them as he is for us. It's just this time around, he seemed to be more in our favour than previous referees have been in other games that we've had. That doesn't make it right. That still shows that the referee isn't good enough and isn't up to the job that he's been put in place to do. And that's what winds me up. And I go back to what I've said time and time again, just as the very last point. If you're playing football with professional players in a professional league, why aren't the referees professional and full-time themselves?
Yeah. Yeah, can't argue with that. It's whether it's because there's so many of them, I don't know. But because there has to be, doing the maths, 12 in each league of the EFL, don't they, every week? And
yeah.
National League and everything. Maybe it's something to do with that and funding, but it's just there's something needs to change with it because you'll go and speak to any football fan of any team in League One and League Two especially, and it'll come up all the time.
Yeah, absolutely will. Right, let's move on from the game. Let's move on from on the pitch stuff. And very quickly, on Friday, it was announced that the West Northants Council have been recommended to accept the Cobblers' bid for the land around Sixfields. Now, I've done a little bit of research into this, Danny. You'll be pleased to know. Mainly because I didn't want to get any of this wrong. So, as we all know, what happened and you know, where we've been for the last, couple of months now, I think it was November, it was revealed that the club had offered to pay £890,000 for the rights to be able to build on or do whatever they wanted, basically, with the land that they hold the lease for, the leases for, which is out the back of the East Stand, with the condition of completing the East Stand being part of that deal. Now, that was going to be taken to a full council and then a cabinet meeting at West Northants Council. But then somebody said, oh, that valuation that the club had met wasn't something called a Red Book valuation. Still don't quite know exactly what it is, but a Red Book is a bit more, definite, maybe. Looked into a bit more, maybe. I'm not sure exactly than what had been done previously. So, therefore, they wanted to go and get this. The council, this is, decided we'll go back and we'll get this Red Book valuation. Now, I do not know whether that has been done for a start. So, I don't know whether the Red Book has actually been done. However, in the meantime, while they went away and decided to delay the talk about it with the council, some third-party developers came in and offered, and they made two offers. They made an offer that was over £1 million to be able to develop the same land that the club have offered £890,000 for. So now there were two offers on the table. Then both parties were asked to basically give a final bid, if you like, table a final bid. The Cobblers turned around and said, well, we'll pay what the land is worth, which the valuation came to £890,000. That's what we'll pay. Plus, obviously, the East Stand being completed will be done within that deal as well. The third party came back with an improved offer, which was £2.05 million. Now, this is what confused me, because obviously, 2.05 is a hell of a lot more money than 890,000. We all agree that. So why on earth wouldn't
that
you
is
take...
fact, yeah.
Yeah. So why on earth wouldn't you take the higher bid? Well, the answer is this. God, this is confusing. So the lease that the club currently hold has a clause in it where the lease would revert back to being with the council if the land is not remediated by 2024. So basically, and I don't know the exact things for this. I have asked, but I didn't get an answer. But remediated could mean a number of things. But essentially, in my mind, remediated just means you do something with it. And you do the thing that you said that you were going to do. Now, what these third-party developers were offering, well, they were saying, well, we will pay you £2.05 million in 2024 when the lease reverts back to being owned by the council. What the club are saying is that we'll pay you £890,000 now, mm-hmm. and then we'll go and do the land. So West Northants Council went and asked the QC, which is like their legal people, to basically recommend an offer for them to take and to go with. After a lot of looking around and digging, the QC have come back and recommended to the council that the club's offer be the one that's accepted. And the main reason that I can establish from this, for this rather, is that they're basically saying you will definitely get £890,000 now from the football club.
Mm-hmm.
If you say no, yeah, and the East Stand built as well. If you say no to that and you say accept the third party developer bid for £2 million, then you will only get that in 2024 if the lease reverts back to being owned by the council and not the club anymore. And at that point, there could be a hell of a lot of like legal action, like the club could take and turn around. The club could just go and do something with the land between now and then say, well, we have done that, so therefore the lease can't be revoked because we've done something to remediate the land. Mm-hmm. Blah, 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 blah. So there's no guarantee that the council would actually ever get into a position where they'd be able to take £2 million.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why the QC have recommended that the council accept that offer. So
the was offer will now, because we don't know who the other developer was, do we? Was it Neil in his water park? Did they try to get a sneaky bid in?
No, I don't know who it was. I did ask Neil for comment. He said
he mysteriously said, absent from this podcast.
Yeah, he just said the word slide repeatedly. I don't know what it was. Anyway, this offer, so the cobbler's offer of 890K and the whole deal, the whole contract, all this, that and the other, will now be discussed at a full council meeting, which will be happening next Monday on the 21st of Feb. And then the following Monday on the 28th of February, it will be discussed in a cabinet meeting. And the understanding is that the offer will be accepted by the full council and by the cabinet. There we go. Thank you very much. Job done. Finished.
Very good. Brilliantly explained. Enjoyed that.
Dear me.
You sounded very ministerial reading all that out, Chaz.
Thank you. More Ian Blackwood than Boris Johnson, I hope.
Yeah.
So there we go. So it looks like, and I'm not going to count my chickens or my pigeons or anything like that too soon, but it looks like potentially the deal for the football club and the whole sorry saga to move on will hopefully move on within the next couple of weeks.
I'm sure there won't be any snags, Charles, and everything will just move along smoothly.
Definitely. Do you know what? I can't be bothered anymore.
No, it's got to that point where I'm like, right, until I see something happening.
Yeah.
This is good because you've explained this to me and I didn't really understand it at first, so you've explained that to me very nicely.
Oh, you're welcome. Enjoyed that. You're welcome. So thank you for the help. The person that helped me out understanding that. They know who they are.
Right. Was it Ian Blackford?
It was not, no. He was asked to leave. Right, we'll take a very, very short break and we'll be back in a moment.
It's time to read your letters out, but things have changed, so listen out. If you want to write about Northampton Town, you'll need to write this next bit down. Just have a rant or just some fun at podcast@cobblerstome.com. No matter if we lose or win, send us your thoughts. Come on, get them in.
Yes, it's postbag time. I nearly said it was podcast time then, and, 40-odd minutes into the pod. It's time to start the podcast. No, it's postbag time, everybody. We have got a lovely email that has come in. podcast@cobblerstome.com, Danny, is the email address. This is from Peter French.
Oh, go on, Peter.
Hi, guys. Huge thanks for the podcast, which I thoroughly enjoy. I subscribe to both cricket and politics podcasts, but always listen to yours first. Thanks, Peter. just wanted to email about Scott Pollock. He was someone who I thought had loads of potential, but John Brady doesn't seem to rate him. And even when he is on the bench, he isn't brought on. I imagine he will move on at the end of the season and may not make it. This got me thinking about young players who he didn't rate as a club, but have progressed after leaving us. Steve Morrison springs to mind. Can you think of any others? Keep up the good work.
Steve Morrison. I remember Steve Morrison scoring a goal at Darlington when I went up there to an away game. I think it might have been one of his only goals. And I thought he was going to be the next big thing after that. Yeah, he was, but just for different teams.
yeah, I was going to say, for different teams. I mean, to be fair to Steve, he dropped into non-league, didn't he? Mm-hmm. And then kind of had to rekindle his career, which he then did spectacularly, really, didn't he? And then went on to have a storming career, especially with Millwall, which was just fabulous. Very pleased to see him do so well there. Of course, Cardiff City manager now, isn't he?
Yeah.
After, again, having a brief spell with us as a coach. Doesn't seem to stay with us for very long, does
that
he?
That was weird. Well, no one does. Though.
No, that's true.
Come and have a look around and think, no, not having that.
To answer or to go with Peter's question, Steve Morrison is the obvious one. I think he's the one that everybody always thinks of in this situation. I can't necessarily think of anybody else that came in. I mean, Luke Chambers, maybe. But we did rate
him. We rated him quite well, didn't we? Yeah.
So I'm finding it very difficult to think of anybody that we didn't rate and then moved on and proved us wrong as a club.
Yeah. It's someone like Hiram Boateng has gone on, but he's not gone on to have a massively great career. I hardly rated him at all, but seems to have gone on and done all right for himself. Trying to think of any others.
Not necessarily a young player, though. He was on loan for us, wasn't he?
I don't know how old Darren Byfield was either when he was here, but he didn't seem up to a lot, but then he went and stormed it for other teams.
Yeah. Walsall in particular, wasn't it? Darren Byfield was successful with. No, you see, I mean, young players to me is a bit like, well, I think of the likes of, you know, your Michael Jacobs coming through the youth.
Because you think they're good enough to leave, then they just go, don't they?
Yeah, and yeah, so that's a tough one. Let us know if you've got anybody that springs to mind that we've clearly forgotten. Then send us an email,
chriswilder@me.com.
Chris Wilder. Love it. Absolutely. Matthew Forsyth has been in touch, Danny. He says, hi, love the pod. Son of Bruce. Love the pod, and it's a regular listen now on the dog walks. As a newly returning season ticket holder with my two kids in the North Stand, they have taken to Liam Roberts as one of their favourite players. How would you rate him against the past keepers of late? Especially as he seemingly got some slack in the fans forum back in August. Great pod work and up the cobblers. If you can go back and listen to the fans forum from August to find out what Matthew is talking about there. Slated before he'd even appeared in a cobbler's shirt on the pitch. I mean, he's, for me, Danny, I don't know about you, but he's probably the best keeper that we've had since Adam Smith.
Yeah, I'd even put him quality-wise above him. Just about.
I was going to think Matt Ingram. At the time, but I mean, he wasn't with us because Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank sent him back, didn't he? Was he on loan for us from QPR?
Yeah, I think so.
And it got to January, didn't it? And then Jimmy Floyd sent him back to QPR, despite him, at the time, me thinking to myself, he was one of the better keepers that I'd seen us have for a while.
Yeah, and he's regularly playing championship football now as well for Hull, so
yeah,
that's worth another one on the list. But Liam Roberts is great, so good.
He is.
We're being spoiled after last season, I think, in terms of that goalkeeping position. And it's not just his ability, I think it's his connection to the fans as well. I think I saw this week, was it Henners who tweeted out that discussions are ongoing with his contract after we talked about it on Tuesday night?
Oh, yeah, so that all started after we talked about it.
Didn't we? Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, John Brady called him in the next morning and sat him down. The pod have been talking about this.
Yeah.
But no, it's his character and his, like, after the game is, I was about to say fisting to the crowd, but that's not right. His joy at winning and keeping clean sheets is great. And we need more like that. So
he's taken what the feeling that has been generated around the club through having the local team of coaching staff, or the local team that make up the coaching staff, in Brady Calderwood and Rico and more, in fairness, onto the pitch. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that obviously Liam isn't a local. He's not from Northampton. I think he's from Walsall originally, as well as being the last club that he played for. But he's really grasped that concept of that we're all in this together. They're just the ones that go out on the pitch, but we're all a part of the same team. I love it. And I think that is exactly what is just so great about him at the moment, that it really does bring this kind of togetherness from the fans to the players, then the management team. It's really good. I'm really pleased. So yeah, if the club need any sort of additional things, I mean, I can throw in a podcast mug into the contract negotiations.
Yeah,
I've still got some stickers left over. We could.
Oh yeah, I've got some stickers. I've got my Euro 2020 Panini stickers as well. I can throw it.
There you go.
It's still stuck to my desk in front of me.
I mean, does that mean that you've got to unpeel them to give them to him?
Oh yeah, but they won't mind that.
He won't mind.
I picture him as someone who quite likes a sticker.
Liam Roberts loves a sticker. Brilliant. Rob Collins has been back in touch, Danny. You may remember a few weeks ago, he said that he was going to go to the game. He said, further to my message of 2 weeks ago, my brother and I had a great time at the Salford game. For the record, my match summary is that it was like watching a game of heading versus passing, with some dodgy refereeing decisions thrown in. The halftime chicken and Balti pie was tasty, but did repeat on me. We also bumped into an old friend, which was a bonus. We will be back. Keep up the good work.
Excellent.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks for letting us know.
Yeah. I mean, watching a game of heading v passing with some dodgy refereeing decisions is basically League Two in a nutshell.
And some League One games as well.
Yeah. We've got one on the Slack.
Oh.
Charles.
Go on.
From young Matthew Sammons.
Oh, hi, Matt Sammons.
Yeah, Morecambe fan Matt Sammons. He's saying, off the back of the football songs/anthems question last week, what are some of the best/worst chants in football? And he's going to put forward Hull's "You're Getting Mauled by the Tigers" as one of the worst.
It's the actions that make that terrible.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
I don't mind them singing it. Just don't put the ridiculous actions with it.
It's like you're at a Haven holiday camp or something.
I can't think of anything specifically, but I've always kind of cringed at any, and this makes me sound so old, but any song that is just created by taking a current song, or a song that has come into the charts and then rewording it for your team. And then it all of a sudden is being sung by every team in the country up and down the land within a couple of weeks. That always makes, because I just think to myself, just be original. just go out there. I mean, it's a bit like when you go and get, like, everybody sings the Spandau Ballet Gold, don't they now? We used to do it for Ricky Holmes. And back then, I hadn't necessarily heard a lot of other teams singing that song, whereas now a lot of them say it. Did we? Not very often with Andy Kirk, though, surely.
There's a good one that the club tweeted out today, being sung about Liam Roberts. The Liam Roberts is the best on earth, to the tune of Heaven is a place. Yeah, that's it.
Worth. Oh, heaven. Yeah, that one.
That's
it.
That's the one.
I do like. I mean, that would be quite good to hear being sung by the Cobblers fans, because it's a bit more tuneful, that.
Yeah.
You've got to be able to carry a tune.
With chance, original was the best, I think. Like, original fun specifically for someone is it's the best. Like, your usual, is there a fire drill or that kind of stuff. Not having that.
Oh, I do like that. Although I will go back to, and I think we were playing Bury, God rest their souls, a number of years back now. I don't think the game was particularly good, but the sponsorship boards were giving some of the lads that, you know, the singers, I think they're normally in the North Stand at home games. So you've got people like Ben Wright, I think Dan, who went for the fan representative, that kind of group of people that always try and get the songs going. I'm pretty sure it was them. Started making chants out of the sponsorship boards. And I've never forgotten it because it was really funny.
Yeah.
That's good. I like it when good. You
enjoy
that.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah,
originally. I don't know how you do it. I really want to know how you could turn an Uncle Joe's mint balls into a football chant.
It's the best when, like, the steward looks like someone famous as well. That's quite
cool. Oh, yes.
And they join in. Mm. I was just going to say one about Danny Jackman when he played against us.
Boom.
Someone started up, "You're supposed to be a gnome," to the tune, "Hey, you're supposed to be at home." I enjoyed that.
I like it.
But yeah.
I like the funny ones. I like the ones where they're the spur of the moment chants, aren't they? They're the ones that just spontaneously erupt without any pre-planning or thought that goes into. I mean, sometimes they're terrible and nobody joins in, but at other points they're brilliant, and then they become a song that is just sung throughout that whole game, but they don't return the next match because they were specific to something that happened.
The one-offs are great, aren't they?
I really enjoy those. That's the postbag. It's podcast@cobblerstome.com, or you can go onto our website, cobblerstome.com, and you can go and fill in the contact form there. Also, while you're on the website, you'll get Danny's match previews that come out every single Friday. He does them for every Saturday fixture, don't you, Danny?
Mm-hmm.
The NTFC women went to Chesterfield. Yeah, on Sunday.
Big 6-pointer, that was.
Big 6-pointer. Top of the table clash, I believe.
It was, yeah. Cobblers 3 points clear for Chesterfield with a game in hand going into it.
Oh.
So we expected a ding-dong. We almost got a ding-dong. But by the end of it, yeah, we were quite disappointed that there was even the sense of a ding-dong by the end. So we went 2-0 up, didn't we?
We did. Alex Dix was both...
The double.
On fire.
Oh, I think she almost got a hat trick as well. I think she hit the post at some point. So. Very close to a hat trick. But it was about the 94th minute, I think, like the last minute of stoppage time, when Chesterfield equalised. It's gutting to do that. But it's a good point, looking at it.
Away from home?
Away from home against a team that's your closest rivals. Still got a game in hand, 3 points clear. Can't really ask for a lot more than that. It's another good performance. It's just they'll be feeling a little bit gutted. I think I saw a comment somewhere saying, I think it might have been on our Slack, saying it might actually be good for them to have that competitive a game to kick them on for the last little bit, just to refocus the minds a bit. But it's still gutting, I think.
Yeah, a 2-2 draw with Chesterfield. But as Danny said, still got a game in hand, 3 points clear at the top of the table, and still unbeaten. Let's not forget.
Yes.
That is got to be, you know, giving confidence, and I hope it does. So I'm not sure when the next game is, but you can find out yourself by going to Twitter and finding them at NTFC Women. They will put the fixtures up there. You'll be able to see manager interviews, player interviews, all the details of the games. It's really well done. You can keep up to date with all the matches as they happen as well, because they do put on tweets that tell you about what's going on in the games as well. So go and check that out. Make sure you follow them on Twitter to get all the information live as and when it happens. Danny. Somehow we've managed to eke this podcast episode out to being over an hour long.
Oh, amazing.
I don't know how we were going. Yeah, I really didn't think we were going to manage it. Just me and you talking about that game that was very, very dull. But we've done it.
We'll make it if we try. And we did.
Yes. And with that, that's the end. Thank you for listening and supporting us. You can support us even more so by going to patreon.com/cobblers2me. Preview show on Friday, Danny. Who are we playing?
Yes.
Colchester.
Colchester. Yes.
Have you got a fan yet?
Working on it.
Working on a fan. We'll have a Colchester fan. That'll be out on Friday morning. And we will be back again for It's All Cobblers to Me next Tuesday. Have a really good week, Cobblers fans. I hope everything goes very romantically for you.
Whey! There's the cup. There's the pictures you'll see on tomorrow's back pages. The Cobblers are going through into Division 1. Bring them on because we deserve it.
This podcast is a proud member of the FanHub 100. Football without fans is nothing, so we've partnered with FanHub to put fans first. Search FanHub app to play your part in the journey.